The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
What's up, everybody? Thanks for joining us today. My name is Kent Swanson. I'm the lead Fulman draft analyst for Arrowhead Pride. This is the AP Laboratory. We're all together already here. Got a lot to cover today. We're going to be mocking the mock. We're going to go ahead and take a look at Chad Reuter's mock from last week, kind of break it down. Spoiler alert, I would do backflips if this actually happened to the Kansas City Chiefs.
I would like to see that.
And then we're
going to
answer all of your mailbook questions. Yeah, I could not do it. Not in real life. There's no chance that could happen.
This should happen just so we get to see you try.
There's a lot of things that I would not want to be seen doing in public, and any basically feats of athleticism at this point are on that list. Like, I'm done, guys. I got arthritis. I'm a frail mess. I'm not the athlete that Maddie is now. Maddie's got his second win trying to come off the edge for the Panthers next year.
Ooh, but I've been called an athlete by the only college quarterback on this podcast. Big time now, buddy.
QB1.
Don't look up my completion percentage. That's all I got to say. We're gonna do a lot of stuff this week. We'll jump right into a mock of the mock. And again, mock the mock, we're not actually just, you know, dunking on people's takes. At least not this week. Going to take a look at Chad Reuter's mock draft, and it came out beautifully for the Chiefs. He had them taking at pick 29, Ja'Kai Polite, an edge from Florida. Maddie, you've been our primary grader on this guy. What did you think about him?
So, spoiler, Ja'Kai Polite is probably my favorite prospect in this entire class. He's an edge rusher out of Florida. He's 6'2", so he's a little on the short side. He probably weighs about 240, maybe 245 pounds. And so he's a little light, and that's the big issue people have with him is going to be his size. But you cannot tell on the film. He is going to lose a little bit at the line of scrimmage just against runs. That's the nature of the beast when you're that size. But just watching him come off the ball with his speed, I think his, not even his first step, just his speed into the backfield is definitely one of the best in this class and one of the best you've seen in recent years. That's even with a false step, like every snap. He has a small like bend in his knees right out of the snap every single time, and he still beats tackles around the corner without them even getting their hands on him, without him having to make a move. His burst is unreal. He's got a ton of pass rush moves, so it's a little bit different than somebody like Dee Ford, which is the connection I think a lot of Chiefs fans make coming out of Auburn, who didn't really have a ton of pass rush moves. Polite has counters on top of counters, and he knows how to set them up, when to use them. The thing is, he just still has to clean up a little bit of footwork with that and off the line of scrimmage, and he's going to be probably the best pass rusher quickly out of this draft class to me, and he might even come right out of the gates at that point. So he's a little bit of a situational player, but as a future weak side defensive end, I think he's an absolutely perfect fit for the Chiefs, and if they get a chance to draft him at 29, I will literally do a backflip if this happens.
Well, and there's the funny thing about this mock and how it's set up is, you know, in a lot of situations when we're looking at stuff, there's like slim pickings for the Chiefs at 29. But in this situation, there were two other players that I would just be absolutely thrilled for the Chiefs to take.
Go with cartwheels this time instead of backflips.
I would do the Carlton dance on repeat for maybe an hour.
Now I gotta see that. Yeah, man.
I have no shame doing that. I'm getting pretty good at that one. I'll just say that much. Brian Burns, the edge from Florida State, was still on the board in this mock draft. Burns is 6'5". He's anywhere between 235 and 245 pounds. I'm assuming on this mock, Reuter thinks that he's going to be 235 because there's no reason that he should have been falling into the second round the way he did in this mock. And if the Chiefs wound up with Burns at 29, if they traded up for him at, I don't know, 18 or 15, I'd be thrilled. He's long. He's pretty explosive. I think he has the best bend in this class. And I've seen him be able to use his length to get strip sacks consistently. He's surprisingly good at the point of attack in the run game. So, you know, a guy that is not particularly dense, you don't expect him to be, but he actually does a very serviceable job. I love his pass rush plan, there's a lot of different moves that he's hit people with. I'm a big fan of his game. I think he's one of the 10 best players in this class. Gregory, there was another guy that had no business being on the board at 29 in this mock draft. Who was it?
It was CB1 Byron Bayron Murphy. Out of Washington, my favorite.
Time out, Craig. You got to hit the Bay Rod. Yeah. There you go. Bay Rod.
There you go.
That's better.
He is my favorite corner in this class. He's ready to go. He's ready to start. He's ready to be an outside corner. He's a little bit small, but he's got great ball skills. He's great in every tech. He's a very smart player, very physical player. Everything he does well. I've talked about him at length on multiple podcasts. If he's there, I'm running to the podium to draft him. But with these other two on the board, it makes it a tough question here.
Well, the funny thing is, this question came to us in a hotly contested debate last week after our podcast, because we literally were paring it down between Byron Murphy and a guy like Brian Burns, just from a priorities perspective, from a roster construction perspective. And actually, we're just going to answer a mailbag question right here before we finish this mock. At Arrowhead Tom asks, what's the actual top need for the Chiefs? Seems split between safety, cornerback, and potentially defensive end. I think we can eliminate safety. I think we all kind of think cornerback and edge are probably pretty high up there. Let's go ahead and debate here. Maddie, give us why the Chiefs' biggest priority is the cornerback position.
So I'm going to say, I don't think you can cut safety out. I think it's just defensive backs the biggest need, whether that wants to be a corner or a safety going forward. But for the cornerback, here's 100% why. Go back to the Chiefs' losses this year, to the Patriots, to the Rams, to the Chargers. What good is another pass rusher going to do when you already have two exceptional pass rushers that were on the team? I understand they're not going to all be here next year or going forward, but even if you replace Dee Ford and Justin Houston with equal players, those losses still play out the exact same way until you find somebody that can cover a player for 3 seconds. Not 5 seconds, not 6 seconds, 3 seconds. Our corners were getting beat in less time than it takes a quarterback to throw the ball on a great day for them. These guys couldn't stick with anybody, no matter what pass rush you have, unless you have Aaron Donald, who gets unblocked for whatever reason, is getting to a quarterback that quickly. Adding more pass rushers is awesome. The fans love it. I love it. Like I just said, Ja'Kai Polite's my favorite prospect in this draft, and I'll love it if they take him. But if you give me the chance to get a corner that can actually affect the game in those first 3 seconds, and it's taking someone to get to a quarterback, to me, that's much more important, especially when you consider the fact that we're going to lose half of our cornerbacks from last year. They weren't good, but we're still going to lose them. So now you're playing the backups to the bad cornerbacks. What do you expect is going to happen even if you do get to the quarterback consistently or, you know, at the league best rate like we did last year?
Okay, Craig, I want you to make the case for the edge position, and I've got some stuff I'm going to jump in and pile on Maddie after that. So go ahead.
Oh, I know what Ken's bringing. I got the counter for that, too.
I think that you just – edge is the most important position on that side of the ball. I think cornerback has closed that gap significantly in recent
three
years.
Tech.
But pass rusher is the most important position on the defensive side of the ball. I think that you can set a tempo. It's a guy that can affect both facets of the game more readily than a cornerback. And then on top of that, if we're talking about guys that they're going to be losing in future years here, they're probably going to tag D Ford this year. We don't know what his future holds. If he doesn't stay healthy again this year, or if he underperforms, I don't know if either one of those things is true, but that leaves Breland Speaks as your only edge defender for 2020, unless you think that Tano Passigno is just going to all of a sudden burst on the scene and become a top flight pass rusher. I don't really think that's the case. So you have to have that future plan. Breland Speaks is not going to get it done as your primary pass rusher. You're going to need a guy, or you're going to end up paying somebody $21, $22, $23 million in free agency just to rush the passer for you. It gives you more flexibility if you can find a good edge on the rookie contract.
And so I tend to lean, and this is where me and Craig kind of ended up last week when we were discussing short-term and long-term outlook. You know, yes, cornerback and edge are huge needs for this team in 2020 and in 2019 too. I mean, corner's probably a higher priority for 2019. But when I'm looking at the long-term outlook of this roster, when I'm looking at specifically the 2019 draft and philosophically trying to acquire successful edge rushers, most of your best edge rushers are going to be round one players. The physical traits typically go in the first 32 picks. And then even guys like Frank Clark, who had first round traits and abilities and athleticism, fell to the second round because of some character concerns, some major character concerns. So you look at that and you say, okay, edge players, if you're going to get one, if you're going to get a guy that's going to be able to affect the quarterback, you're probably going to need to find him in round one. Then you add to this, if this class in particular at the cornerback position, there's a strong second round class. So there's a lot of guys that fall in that range that are going to still be able to contribute at a high level. So if I could say pair Janoris Jenkins with I don't know why I'm saying this one. Maybe Rock-Ya Sin, spoiler alert for a few minutes from now. Maybe I have enough there at the cornerback position to still have success pairing those two, like a Janoris Jenkins, a Rock-Ya Sin with Kendall Fuller, Charvarius Ward. I've got enough at that position and some guys to look forward to in the future. I've solved my 2020 pass rush there still. So that's kind of where we've fallen on. Maddie, what's your counter? Because I'm sure you've got...
Oh, I got the counter. We talked about this. There's more number one corners that are going in the first round than number one pass rushers. You're finding less number one corners in the second, third, fourth rounds than you are pass rushers. Like when we went back and recently looked at it, it is mostly with character concerns, but there have been more good pass rushers that have come from the second, third, fourth round than there have been number one corners. I think that argument's kind of flown out the window in the last 5 years as teams have realized how important corner is. And as Craig said, it's kind of closed that gap. You can jump back in. I see you itching.
Sure. Yeah. So I guess and I don't disagree. Like, it's hard to find lockdown number one corners,
which this team desperately needs.
Okay. So there, Byron Murphy and Greedy Williams are potential to be lockdown number one corners. Yes. Potential
to be.
Yeah, that's
where I'd be going.
And Bayron might not even be a slam dunk. We'll see how he tests. Because if he's down there at 29, it's because he probably didn't test great.
So, do not slander my man like
that. I don't think he's going to test great, and I still think he's got lockdown potential. If he doesn't test god-awful, I think he still has lockdown potential because what he does really well isn't necessarily be super athletic.
Right. And I think that's fair. But at the same time, I think you can elevate the value and the talent better by, you know, going with a Janoris and a Rock Ya-Sin with piled with a round one edge rusher than waiting until round two to try to grab your edge rusher. I don't think your potential to have both needs satisfied at a high level in 2020 is best, you know, if you decide to go cornerback in round one. So we'll move on here, unless you have something, Matt.
Oh yeah,
do you
we
have
got
something?
Another big one. Average corners going, average amount of corners going before the Chiefs pick again at 61 is 9 in the last 3 years. That means you're not getting Rockison. I know what we said, spoiler, in this mock we are, but you're not getting your top 9 corners at pick 61. You're getting your 10th best corner. So I think that's a big drop-off, whereas the averages are you're only losing, I believe it was 7 edge rushers by pick 61, which for our ranking system right now ends up being Montez Sweat would be the next guy in line. So if that's, now I don't think he's going to be there in the second round either, but right. If you're looking at the amount of numbers of the guys you're getting, you're losing more corners before you pick again on average by pick 61. You just said this class is stronger at edge than it is corner. Why would I not take the weaker position group in the first round and then get a, when there's going to be more corners going by the time we pick again in the second, if that makes sense.
Because I guess my thing is, I think that there's a strong first class for the edge position. After that, I just, in general, I'm not banking on getting a highly productive pass rusher unless it's Frank Clark with character issues, right?
So you think that's going to go ahead and use the name Lonnie Johnson, because that's kind of where we talked about earlier at the rankings, is a higher potential corner than Christian Miller, Chase Winovich, DeAndre Walker are edge rushers?
I would say yes.
Okay. I think we disagree, because I think those guys are definitely better edge prospects with higher upside as edge guys than Lonnie Johnson is as a cornerback.
I personally would agree with that, being the guy grading the corners, but if you told me it's Montre Hardage, maybe I argue that a little.
Yeah, and I think that's where the issue comes in, is with corners especially, there's different ways to play cornerback, so you're looking for a particular set of skills when a bunch of skills work. It's like, I get where people are coming from. And 3 years ago, 4 years ago, you tell me edge rusher, no matter what's the most important, I would buy it no matter what your team is. I just think the NFL's adapted this really quick passing game. If you don't have a corner that can stick with the receiver for 3 seconds, which the Chiefs don't, and that includes Kendall Fuller, unfortunately, I have to say it, he was not that good this past year. He's also a free agent after the 2020 season. There's no guarantee he's coming back then anyway, and I don't know if he's a true number one. I think you need somebody that can actually lock down a player for more than up to 3 seconds to allow a very good pass rush to get there.
So the other question I'll have is, you see all these pass rushers that are not hitting the market this year. So you see DeMarcus Lawrence, you see, you know, D Ford, for instance. All these guys aren't hitting the open market, but a solid, if the Chiefs added Bradley Roby tomorrow, you'd be excited. Yes?
Yeah, I think Roby is a solid corner. However,
I think you can get solid corners. I still think, and I think it's a more precious asset still to acquire an edge, and you still have a better chance of acquiring a cornerback in the open market. And I think, you know, you can get enough contribution out of Janoris Jenkins, Rock Ya-Sin, and Kendall Fuller and Charvarius Ward. I think that's enough, right? Like, and I think that's kind of what I'm saying, but like long term, but you need
edges.
How much
better is Bradley Roby than, say, Preston Smith as a pass rusher? Is Bradley Roby that much better of a corner than Preston Smith, who is likely going to hit the market? It sounds like there's a chance Clowney's going to hit the market. Trey Flowers probably isn't getting paid in New England. So, I mean, it's a good edge rushing free agency class. So it's not like this is
but
every
I don't,
year.
I'm not even sure Clowney's going to be there.
No,
like, a lot of people are saying Clowney probably won't.
And I'm not guaranteeing it by any means. But, okay, Trey Flowers, Preston Smith, like, are they really any worse than Bradley Roby in terms of comparing an edge rusher to a corner? So if you, I mean.
They're probably more expensive than Roby. That would be the only counter I'd have.
That's true. And
Flowers,
the thing about
the
edge market is Preston Smith and maybe Jadeveon Clowney. That's it for the entire league. Flowers might be the guy that winds up there. But again, like, I mean, you're talking about there was seven, eight potential edge rush candidates that are hitting or potentially hitting the open market, and the cornerback class, there's not. And all these edge guys are sticking. They're all staying there. So, the thing is, the Chiefs, like, and we can just kind of close this because we went like 15 minutes. I knew this was going to happen. We went like 15 minutes on it. But, obviously, edge and corner are significant positions of need. I do agree safety is still a position of need, obviously. I'm not arguing that, and we'll get to the rest of this mock here now. But, those are the two positions that I think that they need to try to come away with. Rock Ya-Sin, the cornerback from Temple, is the 61st pick, according to Chad Reuter. Craig, tell us a little bit about Rock.
Rock is a long kind of project corner. He needs a lot of work with his feet, but he's very physical. He's got good ball skills. He's just learning the position still. He's really only played at a high level for a couple years now. So he's developing as a player still. He has the size, length, and plays with the kind of physicality that you want for a lockdown type corner, but you're probably not going to get him as a guy that's going to contribute at a really super high level year one. He's probably going to be kind of a secondary guy, and you're hoping for a kind of cornerback by committee to be improved overall. But year two, year three, year four, he's a guy that maybe you can look at as being a major contributor if you can develop him.
At pick 63, Maddie, Juan Thornhill, the safety from Virginia. I would love this selection as well. What do you think about Thornhill?
So I'm going to get a little bit of flack for this, so we're going to start out by sugarcoating it. Juan Thornhill, I love him as a player. I think he's got some good range if you're not asking to play center field. He's an ex-corner, so he's got man coverage skills. He's a very, very high-Q player. He's not afraid to stick his nose down in the box and hit blockers, runners, and he's got some of the best highlights in terms of ball skills that you're going to find. So he's a playmaker as a safety, and he pairs that with being very high IQ, very intelligent as a football player. My issue is I'm just not sure how athletic he is when you compare it to the rest of his just overall size. So I think you might end up being limited a little bit in what you're going to do with him. He's not a super physical drop down the box and play against the run kind of guy over and over again. And I don't know if he's going to sit there and be a center fielder. So he's kind of this mixture of a player that the NFL usually doesn't know what to do with anymore. And for that reason, just looking through this mock draft, there's guys like Chauncey Gardner-Johnson or Deontay Thompson that are going after Juan Thornhill. Who, again, I like as a player, and he definitely belongs on day two. But to pass on those guys who I think definitely have that pure center fielder ability, and Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, spoiler to unfortunate Nasir Adderley fans, is my safety one. I think he's essentially a better version of Nasir Adderley. So putting that out there right now. But I think he can play center field. I think he's a very good nickel defender as man-to-man coverage in the slot. And he's a better, more physical tackler than he used to be. That was his big issue. But he could slide up into the box from time to time as well. So that's where I would go with the pick. But safety, Thornhill, I'm down with the pick. I just think there was slightly better options at the same position.
I am a Chauncey fan. Juan Thornhill, I think he probably could stick at center fielder, but I need to watch him more. I just need to watch him more. I'm gonna go back and watch him a little bit more on that. Daryl Henderson, running back from Memphis, went to the Chiefs at 92. So based on, I've kind of been riding the, I'm not sure I want the Chiefs to invest in a running back in the first 2 days of the draft. I do like Daryl Henderson as a player. And the fact that they went and addressed so many needs early in this draft with Thornhill, with Rock Ya-Sin, with Ja'Kai Polite, it gives me a little bit of a buffer here. He's a good player, though. Now it's time to answer your questions. Haven't done it in a couple weeks because we had the boardroom episode last week. So let's just jump right into these questions. Mr. C. David asks a three-part question. I'll answer the first part. Do you think Patrick Mahomes will have better or worse stats in his second year? I think he'll have less touchdowns and maybe about the same interceptions. He'll have some worse stats, yes. It's hard for him to sustain the success he had last season. His pace kind of slowed down towards the second half of the year, but they're still going to win a lot of games. He's still going to have a great season. He basically lapped every quarterback last year anyway. So, yeah, he's still going to have a great year. It's just not going to be as good as it was. He asks, of the Chiefs players currently on the roster, Maddie, who do you think is going to have a breakout year in 2019?
This is kind of a tricky question because I don't know if anybody's in particular set up for a breakout year. And just like by that, I mean a high quality year. So the guy that I think is going to kind of show the most improvement, I wanted to say Andrew Wiley, but I think everybody knows that he was already very good. So I don't know if just starting more counts as a breakout year. So we're going with Dorian O'Daniel. I'm going to trust my draft evaluation process with him. He's now in a better position for his skill set. I think as a weak outside linebacker in a 4-3, I think he'll get a chance to shine in coverage a little bit more, play more in space, deal less with linear angles, and just get a scrape down more. So I expect a lot better season from O'Daniel, almost to the point to where everyone's going to acknowledge that he was actually a pretty solid pick and wasn't on the field as much last year because he didn't fit.
Craig, if D Ford balls out next year as he did this year, what should the Chiefs do with him?
If D Ford plays a full 19 game season next year and has, you know, the same amount of sacks, has the same kind of impact that he did this year, I mean, the Chiefs have to put an offer on the table. You have two full healthy seasons. If they trust him and they trust that back, You almost can't not do that because he will at that point have been a top five, top 10 pass rusher for 2 years in a row. I know people are scared to death about paying him and him getting hurt, but if you trust your medicals, then this is a little different situation. I think you have to pay him in that situation.
It's all about the bag, baby. At Mike LWS asks, would you take Jeffrey Simmons with one of the second round picks given his injury? So, yeah, he's a phenomenal player. I don't know if the Chiefs will, though, just because he does have a issue in his background where he stepped into a fight with his sister and another girl. And I haven't seen the video yet, but he put a pretty good whooping on her. And I just... That might be, he's been a model citizen since, but that might be hard for the Chiefs to do.
Yeah, I think if the question is with one of their second round picks, for me, it's an absolute no brainer. I would probably do it with their first round pick, even with the injury, because he's that good of a player. He's a top 10, 15 player, and like that's not even based on like the class, like pushing guys up just because there's not always top 32 first round picks. No, he's that good. Him paired with Chris Jones would be phenomenal next year. You got two guys that can bypass as a one tech from time to time, but both of them are going to be super explosive pass rushers at three tech. It would be insane. But like Kent said, I just don't know if the Chiefs are in a position to do it. The recent issues with Kareem Hunt and then still having Tyreek Hill on the team, no matter how you feel about it, really does cause a PR mess. So it would just be hard to pull off. If the Chiefs do it, though, again, I would be super happy because I think he's a great player, and it really does sound like from everything that he's been on the honor roll, he's done everything right. He seems like a really good kid that just made a bad mistake based on a poor situation and an interesting upbringing leading to that situation.
And on top of that, I think it's a little closer to the way that Tyreek handled the situation after the fact. Now, Kareem Hunt lied to the team. He lied to Andy Reid. The video came out. They found out that he had lied. They didn't feel like they could trust him. Simmons had just, you know, he's been a guy that has owned up to it completely. He has done everything in his power to sort of eliminate that and put that behind him and try and remedy it. And, you know, he doesn't dodge questions about it. He will come right at it, kind of in the same way that Tyreek did as well. So that would be the only thing that would make me think that maybe the Chiefs might take him. It would be a risk from an off-the-field standpoint, but on the field, he is amazing.
And I don't even know if it's a risk from the off-field perspective as much as it is. It's just really hard to go and do that again with it regards to the PR, because I based on everything I've researched, he's so far beyond that, and it's really not part of who he is even, really. So At ND Blair asks, in your piece on the roster last week, you guys never mentioned Dustin Kolk with $3.1 million against the cap next season, and $1.8 could be saved by cutting him. Pains me to ask, but he's expendable. This was actually a debate that we had a little bit, Maddie. What do you explain? Just go ahead and explain it.
So I did bring up the Dustin Colquitt angle, actually. Part one, because he's a little expensive for a punter. Part two, I really like hefty and husky punters. And there's a couple of them in this class. They're just some good round boys kicking the crap out of the football. And I'm just a sucker for a husky punter. But at the end of the day, his contract's a little big for a punter, but the Chiefs also kind of set it up in a way that I don't think they're considering getting out of it. The way the contract's set up, with the dead money being the 1.3 it is to get out of it, that's a big hit to take to move on from a punter. If your goal was going to be to move on from him after a year, you would have set that up a lot better. So it just seems like he's set to be here.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Andy Reid loves him. He seems like the locker room loves him. I mean, he's the reported prankster on the team and everything like that. So he's a guy that I think has a lot of intangible benefits in this squad. But man, $3.1 million to be Patrick Mahomes' punter. That's good work if you can get it.
Yeah, right. And I think, like, for us, it was just kind of like, I mean, it was almost like just dismissive of the conversation, just because, like, we know it's not happening. There's no chance it's happening. There's no point in even really going there. So even if, like, yeah, it's probably good business to, like, not do that in the first place, we just kind of, you know, whatever. At SHWeb29 asks, rank these free agent cornerbacks, please. Steve Nelson, Ronald Darby, Bradley Roby, Bryce Callahan, Pierre Desir.
For me, it's Darby. Even with the recent injury history, I think he's just the better corner overall. He's got the highest ceiling of all those guys, and he's 25. And then after that, it's Roby. I'm still a very good corner. I think he fits here, and he'd be a little cheaper than Darby. Darby's obviously going to be the most expensive. Then it's going to be Steven Nelson. After that, he started more games. He has done more in this league than the next two. Bryce Callahan's just short. He's really short. you're not getting him to come out and be your CB1. He's going to be kind of a guy that's a slot corner. So for the Chiefs, not that guy. And Pierre Desir kind of is on that same level. He just doesn't have a whole lot of experience. He's been on the Colts roster for 4 years, and he really hadn't played hardly at all until this year. And he was just okay this year. He wasn't great, so I wouldn't gamble on him being a big, big player at this point.
I think I'm kind of similar. I actually have Roby number one just because I think it's a little bit safer. Like, I agree that Darby's ceiling's higher, but I know Roby's going to go out there and play the majority of the year. And I actually think Roby's kind of good because he can play any technique you want him to. Man, zone, press, bail. He's capable of doing everything. So he's going to be my number one. Darby's two. That injury history really does scare me. And I think there are some limitations to what you can ask him to do. Next, I am going Bryce Callahan. He's small. He's a slot-only guy. I get it. And we kind of already have that. But if I'm not ranking these specifically for the Chiefs, we're definitely going to go with Callahan next. I really want to pit Pierre Desir next because Steven Nelson just isn't my guy. Like, he just simply isn't my guy. I don't like his play. I don't like his style of play. I don't like his attitude. The way he presents himself, like, through Twitter, social media, even just on the field with complaining when he blatantly puts somebody in a headlock and gives them a noogie saying he didn't hold them. Stuff like that annoys me. He's definitely better than Desir, whose name I can't say to save my life. And but I just can't put him any higher. I'm going to have to put Steven Nelson as a just above him.
At AZWIDS4 asks, who is the first free agent that the Chiefs sign? Not who you wish they would, but actually will sign considering cap and fit. I'm going to take the easy one, and I'm going Vinny Curry. I think that's a guy that just makes sense as a situational pass rusher. I'm taking the low hanging fruit without any shame. He could sign tomorrow, and that very well could happen. I could see him winding up here in Kansas City.
Yeah, no, that was going to be mine as well, but I need to go ahead, I guess. Brennan Scarlett he's going to come and play Sam because the Chiefs do not have a Sam, and they need a Sam. Brennan Scarlett.
Well, we got a single and a bunt here, so let me just go ahead and step up to the plate and call my shot. Really good. I'm saying Landon Collins. I think if he hits free agency, I think it's happening. I mean, it's that simple for me now. You could argue whether or not he's going to hit free agency or not, and I understand why that makes it a little less realistic, but I'm just not sold the Giants are going to try to rebuild by putting a franchise tag on Landon Collins and holding him hostage for 1 year as a safety. He hits free agency. I think it makes way too much sense for him to come here. So I'm saying that's the first guy that signs. And also, your first free agent to sign, or at least like the guy that agrees the first, is usually a big name player. It's usually not a small signing. So I think it's going to be the biggest one, which would be Collins, and it just makes too much sense to me.
Like Brennan Scarlett isn't a big name. Come on.
Yeah, he's likely a 5-6 day into free agency signing.
And you guys are just completely dismissing the idea that Brett Veach is going to try to go bargain barrel hunting and try to find players that don't count on the compensatory formula. Like, come on. At P. Flum asks, with the scheme changes coming on the defensive side of the football, do we expect to see a move away from press man corners and expect to see more zone personnel coming in?
Not necessarily. I think that what Spags likes to do is just a little bit of everything. I mean, Maddie took a look back. He wrote an article on Arrowhead Pride. You got to go find it, read about it. But he does a little bit of everything. He runs some match quarters. He runs some press man. He runs some press bail, press mirror. He does a lot of different things. So he's going to look for guys that are versatile and experienced in a lot of different techniques to come and play corner for him.
Yeah, and I don't think the Chiefs have particularly been hammering for press man corners, like actual get up in the face and jam receivers since Sean Smith. Like, I don't think that's been their thing since Sean Smith was here. And even with him, it was pretty much just him. I think that went away really after we got the horrible comeback loss to Indy in the playoffs. I think we transitioned away from that.
Can we not talk about that?
Hey, this is the question, Kent. I just read the prompt just like you. That's why I'm still locked out of it. But so like Craig said, I think if I had to say what we did or what Spags did the most of, it's going to be match quarters, which isn't really a zone. You're still essentially playing man-to-man coverage. It's just a matter of who you're going to cover is based on where they go in the zone of the field. So you're going to get guys that are capable of playing a bunch of techniques. Essentially, is like Craig said, there's going to be a lot of press, but it's going to be a lot of bail or mirror out of the press rather than them trying to jam receivers at the line repeatedly.
At AC Rocker asks, can you guys explain how a pass rusher who is good as a 3-4 outside linebacker can be bad as a 4-3 defensive end? What are the technique differences? This is going to take a while.
This could take a while, so I'm going to try to keep it simple. The simplest answer is size. 3-4 outside linebackers are smaller, and even more so than smaller, they're usually a little bit leaner and lighter, so they just have less power. Even though a 3-4 outside linebacker is on the line of scrimmage, there's usually a little bit more space. It's either a wide technique or they can be off the line of scrimmage a little bit standing up. 4-3 defensive end is going to be closer, usually lined and tighter to a tackle, so the chance for a tackle to get their hands on them is higher. There's a bigger responsibility in a way against the run just because, again, you're having to attack an offensive tackle a little more often. Now, the 4-3 under-over with a Leo kind of pretty much resembles that of a 3-4 outside linebacker. That 1D end plays a lot more like a 3-4 outside linebacker than a traditional defensive end that everyone's thinking about in the sense when they're trying to think of somebody like a Reggie White or something like that. That's not what a Leo's going to do. So those two are very similar. Just besides that, it's just you're a tighter technique as a defensive end. You're closer to a tackle. You have less space to work with.
At Keith McLean asks, given the defensive staff changes, will Anthony Hitchens win the Comeback Player of the Year award?
I believe you mean Pro Bowl player Anthony Hitchens. I think if we're remembering. Yeah. Now, I mean, he's not even eligible for that. I do think that he's going to be significantly better in this scheme. But
is he coming back from being terrible?
He's going to be. If they're going to start doing that, we're going to have to open the player pool up significantly more.
God, sorry. That derailed. That's my fault.
No, he's going to be better, but nah. No.
I just, any hope of him being a $9 million a year player is, I don't think, he might be serviceable next year. We'll see. At JJ33081316. asks thoughts on Iowa State running back David Montgomery. Would he fit in Andy Reid's offensive scheme? Yes, he would. If you ask me to compare one guy to Kareem Hunt, I think it's probably Montgomery. He's going to be my running back three this year. I have Devin Singletary and Josh Jacobs above him, but he's solid in pass pro. He can do a little bit in the passing game, and he's got phenomenal contact balance. He's a really, really good football player. Would love to see him in KC, but he's not going to be there in round five. So we'll just move on. At Kenny with the Coke asks, does Steve Spagnuolo have his corners travel or not?
Yeah, they do travel a little bit. It's not necessarily common. He likes to have guys that play on the left or the right side, but he will play matchups depending on the game that he's in. The little bit that I've watched the secondary with a focus, he definitely had, like, Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie following around some guys, especially on third downs. So a little bit, but it seems to be more matchup specific.
At Brandon 422 asks a three-part question. Thoughts on adding Tevin Coleman coming out of free agency? Not really looking to invest what cap space the Chiefs have at running back, but he is a very good football player I'm a fan of. Craig, does Ben Neiman fit better into this defensive scheme and where?
Yeah, probably a little bit. He's a little more of a rangier player, a little bit more of a will. They actually, when he was at Iowa, he played a little bit of slot corner. He would kick out and defend some guys out of the slot. So he's a guy that I think could be a little better, but I'm not really counting on Ben Neiman being a big contributor going forward for this defense.
Maddie, I'm sure I'm so excited to hear you answer this question. Thoughts on Byron Pringle becoming a slot receiver?
So I'm a big Byron Pringle fan. I think he's got some juice. I think he can really stretch the field. I don't know if that's what you're looking for kind of as your main threat out of a slot receiver, as a guy that can stretch the field vertically. So while I think there's a chance just based on his athleticism and movement skills that he could play in the slot, I definitely think he's more of an outside guy that's going to get vertical and kind of take the top off. So I don't think he's going to be your traditional slot receiver if that's the route they go. But as we've seen with the Chiefs, they're going to put Kelce in the slot, they're going to put Watkins in the slot, and they're going to put Hill in the slot. You don't have to have a dedicated slot receiver in this offense, nor are they going to have one. So Pringle can be fine as a rotational piece if he picks up the offense.
I thought you were going to go way deeper on Byron Pringle than that, but okay.
I'm trying to save time for you, Kent. Do you want me to go deeper on Byron Pringle and how he has great nuance in his routes and he drops his shoulder to the inside when he's going to make a cut on a corner route to the outside and has a corner turn in two circles? Or how when he hits his little chop step in the middle, he starts pumping his arms, hits him with the motor release, pumps his arm 5 yards downfield and takes off, then drops the ball because that's what Byron Pringle does? Is that what you want from me, Kent?
That was better.
Okay. Hit me with the next question. I got you.
At Chief Boyard DG, a lot of mock drafts have us staying put or trading up. Am I crazy for thinking we could trade back if the opportunity comes and maybe snag a top linebacker prospect along with a corner? Any scenarios where you'd like for that to happen? So we do a lot of mock draft exercises, you know, between our group. There's a lot of stuff that, you know, like it helps us kind of understand where people are going or where people think that players are going. And there has been some situations where the board has not fallen great for the Chiefs that we've looked at. And there might be like five guys that you like but don't love there. And in that kind of situation, like I do have more of a propensity to say, okay, maybe I move back five spots. Three of those guys are still there probably. Two of those guys are still there probably, and I'm just, you know, acquiring an extra asset. So I think there's situations where the Chiefs could trade back into the 30s. I don't guess it. If you had me bet right now, Brett Veach is trading up. It's happening. I doubt that the Chiefs make four picks in the first three rounds of the draft.
Yeah, I'm definitely more on that side. And as we've said, we've run some mock draft simulator stuff just for fun. And there's been some pretty rough boards that leave no good picks for the Chiefs. Unless, like me, you're a Devin Bush fan and think he would step right in as the mic kicking Anthony Hitchens to something else somewhere. But Unless you're going to make that pick, which I'm fine with at 29, but unless you want to make that, there's been times where, and this just kind of shows how silly some of these simulators can be, where Haskins is available at 29, and that's a lot of guys' top quarterback in this class. He's not getting out of the top five. You're going to have other times where you have one of the best offensive tackles available. So like if something like this happens and they can make a trade back for one of these high-valued positions, sure, it makes sense. I just think in this particular draft, the guys that are going to fall to 29 in terms of like being a good value are going to likely be a defensive player or a tight end, which is a position that I don't know if teams are going to trade up for or if the Chiefs are going to want to trade away from.
Yeah, that's definitely the case. It's not going to fall like Chad Reuter's mock draft here, where you've got a top five edge rusher and
two of them,
and the best corner in the class falling to the end of the draft or the end of the first round. There, that's just not going to happen. Realistically, with the way that Brett Veach is, he said it in the interview with Kissel the other day. He said that they got to be aggressive. If they find a guy they like, they have to go get him. I expect that to be the case.
Yeah, that's happening.
Yeah,
like.
He screamed it in an interview with BJ Kissel this past
Brett
week.
Brett Veach gets bored. Like the dude's just sitting there at 29. It's like it's been like 6 hours here, man. Like, you know, he's moving up. Like I would be stunned if he doesn't move up. At Low Lip McGee asks, every year we think every player drafted in the first round is gonna be good. But if you look at back at previous drafts, half of those players turn out to be poop. Who are some guys you think will actually be good, and who are some guys most likely to be busts? Let's just go with busts, guys. And I'll wait. Craig started.
You don't want me to talk about DK Metcalf. Got it.
What?
No, I think a guy that's a potential bust, and it's just because I don't know his fit. I think he's a very good football player and very explosive. Rashawn Gary out of Michigan. I just don't know where they're going to put him. I think he's better suited as an interior defensive lineman, but he seems to want to play on the edge and auditioning to be an edge rusher. I think he's a guy that just might be a quote-unquote bust because he won't have a home for him anywhere, and so he's got to try and project into a spot that he may not fit.
I got a lukewarm and a fire one coming out, so we're going to start with the lukewarm. First,
you better make sure you don't take one of mine.
I'm taking one. I'm definitely taking one. I'm doing both. So, but to start it out though, okay, so real quick with this whole thing about busts, right now there's not a first round bust because if a guy's getting first round hype from everybody right now, he deserves it because it's a prospect, it's a projection. Nobody's getting projected in the first round that like is just going to obviously bust out. You kind of have to wait until after the draft and then you can pick out your Colton Millers and Rashad Pennies and be like, hey, that's not a good pick. It's hard to say right now that these people that are projected to go in the first round because of their traits are going to fail because they don't have good enough traits. It just doesn't line up. But
you done with get off your soapbox.
So my lukewarm take, and this is a guy that I don't believe has any business in the first round, but I've seen multiple times by multiple and connected people, Jalen Ferguson. Okay, I know I did. He moves like Breland Speaks. He's a boxcar. He turns very slowly. I don't see any ability to bend an edge. He has super violent hands, but he's still not sure what to do with them. We were watching him at the Senior Bowl. The man comes off the line of scrimmage like one of those wacky inflatable arm car salesman dealership people. And these hands are just flailing about. And they work because they slap hands and bodies and he's powerful. But then he has to turn the corner. And it's just like watching an 18-wheeler make a right turn going into, you know, three lanes across. It's rough. So that's my lukewarm one because I think a lot of people see that. He's just getting a lot of buzz. The fire one, Noah Fant, I think that he's going to be I think he's going to be okay. I think he's athletic, but I am not sold that he's going to be a first-round type tight end. He's going to be a move tight end that's an blocker that I don't know is going to be as dominant as this first-round hype gives him. I would much rather take Hockenson or Irv Smith over Noah Fant from what I've seen.
Wow.
Wow, that was geez, Louise. Yep. Okay, I'll go here.
Bring some heat,
I guess.
Don't be a coward.
Well, I had Jalen Ferguson teed up. So I had to kind of call an audible. I'm not sure Montez Sweat is going to be a good edge. I don't know if he's got the explosion off the edge that's going to be able to allow him to disrupt the passer consistently. Yeah, he's built like an alien. And, I mean, there was, like, some gasps when he came out for measurements at the Senior Bowl. But I'm not sure that he's got enough explosion or if – I think he's tight. I mean, I think I don't know if he's flexible enough that he's going to be able to sustain success as an edge rusher. So, yeah, that's a guy I'm not really big on. Thanks, Maddie, for that. Moving on. At your boy Skittles.
What's up, Marshawn?
Thoughts on thoughts on Ronald Darby entering free agency.
I think Ronald Darby's a very good corner. We kind of talked about it a little bit earlier. His injury history really scares me. He's never played a full season. He's played like 15, 14, 8, and 9 games in his career. That's kind of scary. The Eagles desperately need defensive back and cornerback help, and it sounds like they're going to let him get to free agency. So that's another red flag right away.
Right.
And the simple fact is I'm not 100% sure that he is as versatile as people might think he is just because they know the name. Not a ton of people, and not in a shot at anybody, but not a ton of people have watched a lot of Ronald Darby to say he's really good at this, he's really bad at this. So I think people just think he's a good corner that's often injured. But I'm not so sure that he's just kind of this jack-of-all-trades kind of corner that can do a little bit of everything, plus the injury history, plus likely a high price tag. I'm a little iffy on trying to make a big push for him.
Yeah, I'm not making a big push for him unless they can get him for a reasonable amount of money. There's just no way that he makes any amount of sense at $11 or $12 million a year, which is, I think, what Spotrac has him at right now. Oof. So that's... That's rough. I'm not paying that. But
it's Landon Collins money.
Landon Collins money for sure. But if you can get him for a decent price, especially coming off of that injury, I think that's a situation where you can try and pick up some value on a player that does a couple things. Really well.
I mean, that's kind of the big question mark there, right? So I think I was going to kind of piggyback on what Maddie said. Like, if the Eagles are not going to deal with it and they're just going to pass, there's a disconnect there between the player's expectations and the team's expectations, or they just flat out do not trust him, which in that case there still could be. I mean, maybe he doesn't want big money, for instance, but maybe they just don't trust him enough to even give him mid-tier money. Like, I mean, that's kind of where you're at with Darby. So, I mean, maybe, you know, it'll be interesting to see what his market looks like, because there might be some major red flags there. Last one of the day at Arrowhead Tom. What would be the most surprising free agent signing? For me, it's Steven Nelson. Like, I don't think there's any way Steve Nelson's coming back. The way he kind of has been on the way out, like he seems like he just needs to stay off social media. Can I just say that? I mean, He comes out, he's the only one to comment on Bob Sutton's firing with the Kermit tee. He gets torched in the Chargers game and starts running his stat line. Like, this is not a dude I want on this team, and I don't think the Chiefs want him on this team either. I think the Chiefs are ready to move on from this dude, and the reason he's Kermit teeing out there is because he knows he's gone.
So mine was actually going to be Kareem Hunt, but John Dorsey decided to go ahead and put his foot down on that one. So instead, we're going to go with the good old-fashioned Ron Parker. Don't think he's coming back. But no, okay, out of house. We're going out of house for one. I do have a real out of house one. I mean, and this is kind of just obvious as well. If Jadeveon Clowney hits free agency and the Chiefs signed him, I would be the most shocked I've ever been, because it's a downgrade as a pass rusher. He's going to be super expensive. There's no connection to him anywhere. It just makes no sense on any level. So to see him signed by the Chiefs for big money would be in a complete and utter shock.
It's kind of lame.
Oh, yeah. You know, he actually picked one that makes sense and not just an ex-Chief.
Okay. Well, for me, while I agree with Maddie that attacking linebacker...
I'd be surprised if Teddy Bridgewater signed.
Took it from me. No. While I agree with Maddie that... Linebacker in the draft is a position that I would look at. Anthony Hitchens' contract isn't stopping me from drafting a linebacker to develop for the future, but I'm not attacking one in free agency. So I'm not going after CJ Mosley. He's going to be expensive. He's going to be a guy that you're paying Anthony Hitchens style money to. He may be an upgrade over Hitchens, but then you're paying almost $20 million to two off-ball linebackers. That is ludicrous money. No.
Sign Mosley. Keep Hitchens. Draft Bush. Let's go.
Oh, man.
There's your problem. Just overcompensate. They overcompensated for stopping the run this year, so maybe they'll just overcompensate for their struggles to stop the run.
They did? I didn't even think they compensated for it.
They tried.
They undercompensated.
I mean, Brett Veach came out with the press conference. Third nine, you can't stop the run in the playoffs. That's unacceptable. Well, and they were not better.
I'm actually fairly certain that the Patriots picked up a third and nine with a run when we lost to them. So, yeah.
They also picked up a lot of third and longs with the same play to...
Oh, to a wide receiver covered by a quarterback, right, Kent?
It's because the pass rush didn't get home quick enough, Matt.
Yeah, the pass rush didn't get home the entire game.
They had 2.2
game, right?
seconds to
Did
get
the pass
there.
Rush get a sack that game? I can't remember.
No, they got a touching Brady penalty when he got the ball out in 2.3 seconds on average.
Touching Brady penalty. God, okay. Behind the scenes, this has been the most technologically stupid day for this podcast, so we're all slap happy. It's actually Monday for Maddie, so we're going to go. We'll talk to you hopefully next week if my computer doesn't blow up and if Maddie's schedule allows.
Even Kent's computer did not like his edge rusher over CB takes.